Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is the 28th of August. The sun is rising and Jesus has risen. And that is good news indeed. It's the hope that we start with every morning here on Faith Radio Mornings, just to declare the central truth of the gospel, that he is risen, that tomb is empty. And because that's true, there is always hope and there is always future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus. And so I'm your host for Faith Radio Mornings, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Happy to be joined in studio, as always, by my friends and fellow believers, Logan Rausch, running the sound and the board, and Paul Perot, who just keeps this news flowing, gets these guests to come in studio, along with Rachel Sutton, produce this show. Grateful to have them, grateful to be with them, and to be with all of you in our listening audience as we talk about the news each morning from a Christian perspective. And of course, a lot of news in the headlines over the last several days, including probably the most prominent news item was the passing of Senator John McCain this past weekend, who, I think whether you liked his policies or didn't, he was really well respected on both sides of the aisle for his fortitude, for his humor, for his earnest love of the country. And yesterday I noticed that his final statement before passing was released. And it really was this deep and passionate letter of hope and a goodbye to the country that he loved. And I think in an era where politicians seem to be continually lowering the level of dialogue by sniping at each other through Twitter, it was a bit refreshing and even sort of harken back to the statesman-like ship that used to be present in our country and around our world as these politicians led with hope and with love and with earnestness like McCain. And so before welcoming Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation, our regular Tuesday morning guest, into the conversation, would love to listen to a segment of this goodbye letter from John McCain.
My fellow Americans, whom I have gratefully served for 60 years, and especially my fellow Arizonians, thank you for the privilege of serving you and for the rewarding life that service in uniform and in public office has allowed me to lead. I've tried to serve our country honorably. I've made mistakes, but I hope my love for America will be weighed favorably against them. I've often observed that I am the luckiest person on earth. I feel that way even now as I prepare for the end of my life. I've loved my life, all of it. I've had experiences, adventures, friendships, enough for 10 satisfying lives, and I am so thankful. Like most people, I have regrets, but I would not trade a day of my life in good or bad times for the best day of anybody else's. I owe the satisfaction to the love of my family. One man has never had a more loving wife or children he was prouder of than I am of mine. And I owe it to America to be connected to America's causes, liberty, equal justice, respect for the dignity of all people, brings happiness more sublime than life's fleeting pleasures. Our identities and sense of worth are not circumscribed, but are enlarged by serving good causes bigger than ourselves. Fellow Americans, that association has meant more to me than any other. I lived and died a proud American.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City.
Of course, that music represents the introduction for Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation. And Tommy, are you on the line? Do we got to be here from Washington, D.C.?
dropped off for a minute.
There you are, Tommy. We got you back here. You know, we always say it's interesting for satellite feeds to go to space and back, and somehow we can manage to connect from you from about 2,000 miles away. So good morning.
Amazing. Good morning.
Yeah, I don't know if you caught some of the excerpt of the speech from John McCain, whether yesterday or just that we played. Yeah, you know, Tommy, I'll say this. In an era of Twitter and the way that politicians tend to communicate these days, it's been a little while since I've been moved to tears by something, but that's really a profound statement, and we just read the first half of it from McCain.
Absolutely. You know, it reminds me that as Americans, we do have shared values. We have values that all of us agree on, that all of us are motivated by, that at the end of the day make us who we are. And we share those things. And I think Senator McCain's letter really tapped into that and reminded us of that. I think that's why it's so powerful, because these ideals that he's talking about, love of country, respect for service, respect for the dignity of the individual, love of family, these are values that are common in all Americans, and I think that's really important to remember.
Well, and of course, part of his calling card, as it were, was that maverick sense of things, where you knew he wasn't beholden always to the party line, and so that gave, I think, a bit of faith that he was going to make a decision consistent with his values, and not just because of some behind the scenes maneuvering or try to, you know, maybe even be blackmailed by somebody else, something along those lines. You felt like he was his own man, and he really wanted what was best for the country.
He did things his way, that's for sure, and it didn't always make everybody happy. But you're right; you knew that it was genuine. You knew that it was a decision he had reached in a heartfelt way. And there's a certain amount of trust and respect as Americans who put our faith in these politicians. There's a certain amount of trust and respect when somebody is willing to buck, sure, their party leadership, but also to buck popular opinion for what they think is right. John McCain certainly had that.
Yeah, and of course, our president often bucks public opinion for what he seems to feel is right, too. And he and McCain were often at odds, but it looked like yesterday the president did come out with a statement, whether it was under pressure from people internally to support John McCain. He didn't initially do that on Sunday when word of his passing came, but he did lower the flags again yesterday and came out with a statement supporting John McCain's life.
You know, I think you're right to point out a similarity between the president and Senator McCain, which is that they do things their way. They don't necessarily do things the way you expect. They don't necessarily do things the way that all the other politicians do. They do things their way. And you're right, it's not always popular. I'm glad that in the end, President Trump has decided, and I think potentially he had always decided, to honor Senator McCain in this way. I think as a nation, we are doing that correctly, and I'm glad to see it.
Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation, and I know, Tommy, you're in Washington, D.C., sort of week in and week out, and one of the things that John McCain called the country to, and especially his fellow senators and congresspeople to over and over again, was to remember those shared ideals and that we really should be reaching across the aisle. And in this era of increasing polarization, do you see that legacy will be maintained somehow, or do you think some of these beautiful words he's been writing and saying will sort of fade into the background?
I think there is a growing sense that those on the other side of the aisle, those in the other party, are the enemy. Not that they disagree, but that they're the enemy. And I think the truth is, reasonable people can disagree on these policy matters, and it doesn't make them the enemy. What our sense of patriotism does, what our love for country does, is it unites us. And it reminds us, Republicans and Democrats, we're all in this together. We're trying to get the political matters correct, and we may disagree on them, but they're not the enemy. They are absolutely fellow Americans who just happen to disagree. We've got to keep an open mind. We've got to have a deliberation and a discussion and a debate in this country that's respectful, and we can't fall into the trap of thinking people on the other side of the aisle are the enemy. And a moment like this, a letter like that, it serves as a great reminder of that. It's slipping through our fingers, and we've got to hold on to it as tight as we can.
Yeah, and of course, in the next couple of months here, we're anticipating the midterm elections, and that's going to be a real big deal with the Democrats trying to get some sense of power back within Washington. And specifically, they're looking at the House of Representatives as a place where they can regain the majority and possibly even impeach the president. So it does look like we're going to be up for quite a bit more rancor moving forward.
I think that's right. The elections lately have been very divisive, I think that the division is going to continue. These are important matters. It's not wrong that there's heightened emotions on both sides. It's not wrong that Americans care very deeply about these issues. But we just have to have a respect for our fellow Americans that overcomes those divisions.
And do you see, I mean, what is the sort of central sort of vibe in Washington, D.C. right now? I know that when you read some of the news reports, you hear sort of this blue wave that is building, and there's a sense that the Democrats, in response to what is the perceived lack of favorability of Donald Trump, are going to take over just maybe both halls of Congress, where on the other side, we see that the president's approval rating seems to be very stable and 90% favorability on Republicans. Is that going to be enough to get the Republicans out to vote and maybe maintain the majorities?
Now, I think it is, but we've been here before. All of the pundits, all of the pollsters have predicted an election result with great confidence that turned out not to be true. And, you know, almost more than anything else, that is convincing me that they're wrong again this year is how spectacularly wrong they were in 2016. And they seem to be growing in confidence that the Democrats are going to take over at least the majority in the House. And sure, if you go district by district and you read the polls that are available in those districts, you might be concerned that the Democrats are going to take over. But there just seems to be a mismatch between that and the viewpoint of real Americans towards the president. I think we would do best in 2018 not to trust the polls again just yet. There was some critical bit of information missing in 2016, and I think it might still be missing here in 2018. So I don't trust the polls. I'm looking at the House majority as sort of a toss-up for this election cycle, and we'll see. We're going to know in November, which is coming soon enough.
You know, Tommy, I don't know what credentials are needed to be a pollster, develop a poll, but maybe you and I could moonlight together. I can text you after the show and we can figure out a poll that we want to generate. It doesn't seem tough to come up with whatever numbers you want these days.
Absolutely. We can say the Republicans are going to run away with it, and if we just pretend we're experts and we're really sure of ourselves, they'll put us out there as experts. That's the key. You've got to be really sure that you're right.
Love it. Just got to own it. This is Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. Tommy, we'll take a short break, and when we come back, I would love your thoughts on the pending confirmation proceedings of Judge Brett Kavanaugh. That's going to be another big conversation happening in Washington, D.C. So more in a moment with Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation on Faith Radio Mornings. It's 20 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined, as I always am on Tuesday morning, by Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation, coming to us from Washington, D.C. Tommy works with the executive branch on policy matters, and appreciate just you taking the time, Tommy, to give us that ground-level view of what's happening in Washington, D.C.
Happy to do it. This is interesting stuff. It's interesting times.
It is. I mean, I find that there's just no shortage of news. I feel like we finally get through a topic, and then 2.5 seconds later, there's something else to talk about. So I don't know if that's a function of the way news is brought to us these days through our phones, where it's this 24-hour cycle. It seems different, Tommy, than me and probably you growing up, where you waited for the newspaper on the front door each morning.
Absolutely. 24-hour cable news was sort of the first wave of change, and that changed things quite a bit. And now we've got Twitter, which, updates every millisecond. And I was talking to my wife the other day. We had an earthquake here in Washington maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and we knew it was an earthquake by looking at Twitter just seconds after the ground started shaking. Just seconds is how quickly we get our news based on social media. It's an amazing thing.
It really is. I get frustrated when I can't find what I'm looking for, and so then I hit Twitter and usually can find it within about 2 seconds. I'm not sure it's trustworthy and reliable, but at least I can find something out there, Tommy, that'll support my view.
Well, absolutely. And this is also, we rely on it because it is ubiquitous, and it is that jolt of news that we want to see. But it also tells us how much power Twitter has. This is why people care so much about what is showing up in their feed and what criteria the social media companies are using to put things in their feed, is because, that's a really big power that these frankly, left-leaning Silicon Valley companies have over us is they control what news we see. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. What constitutes news is often at the direction of the editors in the newsroom. And actually, I'll be talking with Cal Thomas tomorrow, who is one of the best-known editorial writers in the country. And he wrote an article about that which constitutes news and how facts are used to sort of shape opinion. So sometimes the news is legitimate, and sometimes you just wonder if there isn't an agenda. But there does seem to be some legitimate news coming up here next week with the confirmation proceedings of Judge Brett Kavanaugh that's starting on September 4th. And what are you seeing with this one, Tommy? Because this is the second time the president has had a candidate to be confirmed for the Supreme Court. This one feels like it might be even more of a fight than Gorsuch was.
Well, I think that's right. Justice Gorsuch replaced Justice Scalia, and those are two very similar justices. And it was important for conservatives, it was important for Republicans, it was important for the president to replace somebody like Justice Scalia with somebody who was going to play that exact same role. Now, in replacing Justice Kennedy, the president had a chance to replace a swing vote with potentially a more reliable conservative vote in Brett Kavanaugh. The stakes, as we know, are incredibly high. Supreme Court seats are lifetime appointments, which means that they're going to span decades. And they're going to decide important matters for our country, which we can't even imagine today. Over and over and over again, every June and every October, the Supreme Court is going to decide these important matters for our country. The stakes are enormous. There's a growing sort of agreement in Washington that barring anything bad happening, barring, you know, something going wrong in the hearing, that Brett Kavanaugh will be confirmed to the Supreme Court. But that only makes me more nervous, because now we've got to make sure that nothing bad happens in these hearings next week. We've got to make sure that that he has great answers to the Democratic senators who are going to press him really, really hard. But the stakes are high. And the finish line is still yet a ways away.
And I just don't remember growing up, Tommy, just how important the Supreme Court justice nominations were. It felt like it was more of a judicial appointment. But is it partly because we do have this ongoing culture war in America about either side of it that these appointments seem to be such a big deal, because it's not just judicial now? It really speaks to a culture war. I mean, the fact that same-gender marriage became the law of the land really deeply impacted us as a country in ways that I'm not sure I even anticipated.
Yeah, I think the truth is, over the course of our history as a nation, the Supreme Court has become more and more powerful. And the judicial branch of government, which initially wasn't the most powerful of the three branches, is now the most powerful. It can overturn any rule the Congress passes. It can check the president and the administration at any time that it wants. That gives it a great amount of power. And there's lots of reasons for that, and some of them are scientific and some of them are more philosophical, but the Supreme Court has become more and more powerful, and their decisions tend to have the most lasting effect. The president does something, the next president can change it, or the Congress does something, and when the majority turns over, they can repeal it. That tends to happen less at the Supreme Court, so they're the most powerful, and their decisions have the most staying power.
And obviously the abortion conversation, Roe versus Wade, is going to be one of the things that may be on the agenda post-confirmation of Kavanaugh, assuming he gets through. Are there other cultural questions that you see coming up in the next year or so?
I think definitely. I think civil rights, your right to practice your religion as guaranteed under the First Amendment, is under assault from the left. We can look at what's happening to Jack Phillips in Colorado. Now, he won his Supreme Court case this summer, and he is under the same exact attack. This time, rather than refusing to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding, now he's refused to bake a cake for celebrating the transition of a transgender person, and on the basis of his religion. And he's being sued and punished by the Colorado Civil Rights Board again. So I think our First Amendment right to exercise our religion is under attack again, and that's going to be a major issue in the Supreme Court as well.
Boy, it is going to be fascinating to watch. Tommy, I appreciate you taking the time each Tuesday morning like this from the Heritage Foundation to kind of just walk through the headlines, conversation partner on what's happening out of Washington, D.C.
You bet. Have a great show.
We'll take a break for Lighten Up and bottom of the hour news. And when we come back for the second half of our first hour, we'll be joined by Rosemary Stein, and we'll talk about depression in teenagers. So you won't want to miss it here on Faith Radio Mornings. Trying to get my head around the fact that Ken Davis may have actually just said on Faith Radio Mornings that if you fall into a pool of carp, you might be at risk of being hickeyed to death. And so, and unlike, you know, there's nobody like Ken Davis to bring us some humor in the morning like that. Appreciate his perspective. Other news items this morning that caught my attention. One was real important speech, obviously, maybe the most historic and important speech in our country's history. That was Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his famous I Have a Dream speech. And as we've been talking this morning about John McCain's letter of goodbye to the country and just the statesmanlike quality of it, it's another speech I can recommend you head to. Just go to YouTube, catch the whole speech. Really is an inspiring look at our country. We'll take a break for the rest of the news here, and then we'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein and talk about depression among teenagers on Faith Radio Mornings. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we are joined by regular contributor Adam Carrington, who's a professor of political science at Hillsdale College, and he was remembering John McCain.
He's someone that we're not going to see a whole lot of, given the current political climate. And I think that what really drove him, that I think undergirded that comment and a lot of his career, was he had a deep sense of honor, a deep sense of wanting to pursue the noble things that were part of the common good of his country. I think he loved his country, and he wanted to be an honorable man for it. And that's why I think he sought at times to rise above partisanship. And that statement was, I think, very good, because it didn't brush over partisanship. He says, I have fundamental disagreements with him. Basically, I'm a Republican. He's not. We have our differences. But at the same time, he wanted to say that there is something bigger that we're all a part of, that the Constitution, the American Republic, is something that we can have common ground on, and that I think he had a sense that he needed to not merely be a partisan Republican, but he needed to be a man of the United States of America.
It was Adam Carrington reflecting on the life and legacy of John McCain. If you want to catch that entire segment, which I recommend, you can head to myfaithradio.com, search for Adam Carrington or The Life of McCain, and surely it'll come up. We'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll be joined by Rosemary Stein, who will talk about teenage depression and also stories of hope from her ongoing initiative of saving America one child at a time. It's a great conversation with Dr. Rosemary Stein next on Faith Radio Mornings.
Do you love it when somebody conveys to you how much they love and appreciate you? This is Jim Garlow. For years, a friend of mine would either late in the evening or early in the morning leave hidden love notes around the house. As his wife went through her day, she would discover them all over the house. And she was delighted to welcome him home at the end of the day. Because here's a husband who cared so much he'd taken time to leave love notes. Well, God has left love notes for you. Sometimes in His Word, sometimes in the components of your life. And He leaves these love notes for you to draw you in. If you look carefully through Scripture, and if you look carefully through your life, you will see God has left love notes for you. This is Jim Garlow. We need biblical values at the core of our lives, our family, our churches, and our nation. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
That walk-up music just makes me happy each time that we hear it on Faith Radio Mornings. It's Dr. Rosemary Stein joining us. And Rosemary, do I understand you're on vacation right now?
I am on a break right now. We are spending the weekend with Hannah, our daughter. She's a student at App State starting her sophomore year at college. And so we wanted to be close to her during this weekend so that we could bade her, well, not farewell, but do well in college for this year. We come up to visit her often, and we love spending time with our daughter.
That's great. And heading into sophomore year, is it different than this freshman experience that I'm experiencing with my 18-year-old son, Caleb, right now? Where, I mean, this is the first week for him at university life, and it's a big shift. Is it kind of just a little bit more old hat by the time they head into sophomore year?
I find that to be true. The first year was very scary for Hannah as she was leaving the home, and you know she was in the dorm. I wasn't used to being with other kids, and other kids' habits are very different from maybe the Christian kids' habits. So that was a big change for her last year, and this year she's more accustomed to it. She has a better feel for what is coming ahead. But no matter what, whether you're freshman year or sophomore year, it is important to ground them and to continuously pray for our children because they're up against a lot. Hannah tells me a lot about in college that she has to meet up with kids that have a very different worldview than she has. And I feel for her, but more importantly than that, I pray for her every day.
And that is something as parents, when we're feeling so disempowered so often, prayer really does matter at the end of the day that we can at least engage with for our kids. So this is Dr. Rosemary Stein, a pediatrician who does more than just physical care for children, cares for their emotional and spiritual relational needs as well. And Rosemary, I know one of the topics of conversation that seems to be top of the mind these days, and would love to get your thoughts on, is sort of the ongoing depression and suicide epidemic that is certainly growing statistically in our country. And I think just even anecdotally, we're hearing more and more stories, whether it's because of a social media suicide event or just, you know, we get news from our schools, that kind of thing. What's happening these days? What are you seeing in this increase in depression and suicide?
Well, so the most important part of it is that our children are not resilient because parents like us who truly love our children are we're doing everything for them. And so when one of life's problems hits them, they feel that they can't cope. And why cope anyway? Because on top of the fact that we haven't given them those, you know, the building blocks to being a strong people, we haven't given them a hope. We haven't given them an understanding of that they are meant to be and that God has a purpose for them. And so when you do those two things, as we don't build for resilience and then we don't build for a future and a purpose, then they find themselves walking in the dark and not understanding that everything has a purpose. And even this trial that they're going through, that for us seems very minimal, to them it's overwhelming unless they have those two things, resilience and purpose. And so I see it every day at the practice where kids come in and they broke up with their boyfriend or their girlfriend, or they did poorly in the class, or something's just not going the right way. And they say, but I just feel that I have no purpose. Now, you put that together with excessive media participation, and then you really have a recipe for success. And so that's what's going on with our kids. They really have problems because we haven't built a core. And so when you see these things in your children, it tells you, okay, sit back, pray, and start working because you have to build a core in your child again.
And there's an article that you referenced and a study that came out, a fascinating study that shows that children that are growing up in a religious household tend to have much lower statistics of suicide rates, for example. And I remember growing up, Rosemary, that in the difficulties of teenage life, just even having a Wednesday night group or a Sunday morning group to go to kind of gave this beautiful breath of relief throughout the course of the week and the rigors of just trying to do life. And so religion really does matter in the household.
The knowledge that God is with you every time and that this is a purposeful task that we're going through really does bring a lot of hope. It doesn't just bring hope to teenagers. It brings hope to the parents, which in turn, when the child sees how the parent responds to life, then the child will already have a map. And that builds hope in the child. I mean, they should be able to see, okay, my mom, when she's going through something that's difficult, something that's trying, doesn't seem to break down. And that's the one thing that I see a lot at the clinic is that when mom breaks down, the children break down. When mom is resilient, the children tend more to be resilient. And so they pattern themselves after us. And they should be able to see a kind of a map, a kind of a image of how they should act in turn.
Well, and of course, in our Christian faith, and we start our show each morning by declaring the hope that we have in Jesus because of the empty tomb. And this is maybe the only place in life where there isn't a false or a transient hope, that this is a rock solid hope that greets us every morning. And in the midst of maybe, you know, trying to find hope in school or in a job or in a relationship that inevitably will let you down on some level, the importance of our faith to anchor us in this journey, I can't imagine anything more important for our teenagers.
I agree with you completely. And so, you know, once we understand that, then we start building once again. And I think that that building is that action of building our children is one that we do on a daily basis. We don't just wait until the problems happen and say, "Whoops, I didn't do so good." Every day we have to build a little bit more, find opportunities to correct and to give hope to them. And to tell them, you know, you were loved. I love you, but God loves you with an eternal and everlasting love.
And I think as parents, some of what we might struggle with is we have that ideal that we want to build that into our kids. But how do you help parents, Rosemary, when they begin to experience maybe their kids spinning away from them a little bit and can't quite catch up to the day's events, maybe 8 hours away at school, all sorts of time on social media? How does a parent, if they're seeing their teenager or their young person slipping into depressive patterns, how do you begin to pull them out?
The first thing is definitely to pray. And remember, teenagers are going to walk away from you. They're not going to hold always to those values because they have to test them. And I see so many parents that if instead of sort of letting them go a little bit and telling them, I'm here, or, you know, I'm not pleased with what you're going through, but I understand you have to go through it, they really dive in, and the aggressive nature of the child at that point really pushes the parent away, which just aggravates the situation. I tell parents lots of times that we need to have faith that what you've put into your child is surely going to grow, and then pray for your child at the same time. This is not a completely hands-off situation, but it is a sit back and pray and wait. And this is one moment where sometimes we need to wait a little bit, not just in the, and I don't mean just in the depression, it's that push away phase that the teenager goes through, that we have to let that which we've already grown, don't go and dig up the seed. Let the seed grow.
And that is so hard, isn't it, as a parent, when you're just watching it day in and day out. They talk about how the years are short, but the days are long. And in those long days of parenting, to just let your son or daughter begin to try to find their way and trust that seed planted, boy, that is really tricky for a parent.
Oh, yes. Tell each parent about that so that hopefully everybody who's listening that's going through that knows that, you know, you're not alone. And if you find other teenage parents that are, you know, maybe older, have older teenagers and have been through that, you can find solace in that and those friendships. Have a talk with them. Have those parents pray with you because that camaraderie is very important at this time, to know that somebody else has gone through what you're going through and can pray for your child is a jewel in itself.
It's Dr. Rosemary Stein. And Rosemary, when we come back from break, I would love to get an update on some of your ongoing initiatives of Saving America One Child at a Time. These are beautiful stories of hope for our children as we engage with them. So more in a moment on Faith Radio Mornings with Dr. Rosemary Stein. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Dr. Peter Kapsner, and joined on the line by Dr. Rosemary Stein, a pediatrician who helps our children not just physically, but relationally and emotionally and spiritually. Love the conversation, just this holistic approach to helping our kids that really are facing difficult things in their lives and in our schools and in our country today. And Rosemary, you have an initiative of Saving America One Child at a Time, and I love the stories that come out of this. What are you seeing? What's a recent story just of success and hope?
Well, I see that we oftentimes don't think of our children as buildings of God. I've been talking about building our kids and structuring them and making sure that the building blocks are there. It's because God has a purpose for our kids, and sometimes as parents we're living in our day-to-day and our problems, and we don't really give that much thought. I can think of a little boy that came into the clinic last week, and his name is Blake. And this little guy is growing up in a home where his purpose is sort of dark. He's the little guy who doesn't seem to have a conscience. He goes around and he hits people for no motive at all. Recently told his teacher last week, because he just recently started school, that he wants to hurt her. Nobody can seem to control this little guy, and he's 5 years old. So he came into the clinic because his stepdad has fears that he's going to be a psychopath or a schizophrenic. And I looked at the little guy, and he's sitting in front of me, and he looks angelic while he's sitting in front of me. And the stepdad says, I don't know what's going on. He might be scared of you. Now, I'm 5'4 on a good day, and I barely weigh 120 pounds. I am not scary looking at all. And so I looked over at him, and I said, really? He's scared of me. He's scary to everybody, but he's scared of me. I don't think so. So he's looking at me, and so before I start talking more to Dad, I looked over at this little Blake guy, and I said, Blake, you and your stepdad and I are going to talk, and it's going to be a little bit of a long conversation, but tell you what, if you sit and behave yourself during that time, I'm going to let you choose from my pack of stickers 2, maybe 3, depending on how good you are. I said, do you get that, Blake? And he said, mm-hmm. I said, well, the proper way to address an adult is not mm-hmm. It's yes, ma'am, for me, and yes, sir, for a guy. So can you do that properly, please? And he said, yes, ma'am. I said, okay, very good. And then before I turned back to the stepdad, I said, here my hands are really cold. Blake, can you warm them up for me? I'm going to put them between your hands, and you make sure you just heat them up for me while I'm talking to your stepdad. Would that be okay with you? And he says, yes, ma'am. Well, that little guy, while I was talking with stepdad, sat there for about 20, 25 minutes without moving at all. Then he started to twitch a little bit. I looked back over to Blake. I said, excuse me, to the stepdad. And I said, I think Mr. Blake needs our attention right now. And so he and I start to talk, and he tells me about the things that he likes, and just the, you know, he likes trucks, and he likes the Incredible Hulk, which leads you to understand his temperament a little bit. And I said, you have done an absolutely fantastic job, Mr. Blake. And I know that you can continue to do this job because we have these stickers waiting for you. But even more importantly than that is because your mom loves you. She's at work and she couldn't be here today, and she would love to listen to what I have to say about you. She's going to be so proud of you when you get home. And do you love your mom, Blake? And he said, yes, I do, ma'am. And I said, I love the fact that you love your mom. And I know that because you love your mom, you're going to want to do a better job, not only here with me, but at school too. And he said, yes, ma'am. And his eyes were just, they were glowing. You could just tell that he was listening to what I was saying. And so I went back to Dan, and I said, you know, there's a very important person in our history, and I reference this guy a lot, and his name was Louis Zamperini. Louis Zamperini is the guy in Unbroken. He's that guy in the movie that when he was a little kid, he was very similar to this kid. He didn't seem to have a conscience. He would run around in circles. He was fairly uncontrollable. I looked around to stepdad, and I said, I believe that you have a Louis with you. You have a guy that has an amazing purpose. He doesn't seem to have a conscience because there's something very different about his makeup. There's something very